So welcome to Elaine's Literary Salon. This is our remote podcast. We're excited to be here from Creatures, Crimes, and Creativity, Austin Camacho's fun conference in Columbia, Maryland. Have you been here before?
I haven't. This is the first time I've come. I've had other writers recommend it, and I've been to many conferences. Conferences are really useful, and I thought, all right, let me give this one a try.
Oh, well, it's so fun. I'm so glad we bumped into each other here on the conference floor.
I'm thrilled.
So, Judy Murray is a real estate broker with a not-so-secret passion for deals, divas, and danger. I love that. Her passion for mysteries begins with smart girls like Nancy Drew and Trixie Belden, grew deeper with the not-to-be-ignored women like Miss Marple and Nora Charles, and finally evolved into her own gutsy heroine, Helen Morrissey. Judy incorporates her extensive knowledge of all things real estate with a passion for the Chesapeake Bay, where she now lives at Buoy 2 with her husband. Buoy 2, is that the name of the...
Buoy 2.
Is that on the boat? Are you?
No, Buoy 2 is... Buoys are markers on the bay, on any piece of water. That's substantial. And, of course, sailors, boaters use it as a marker so they know where they're going.
Okay.
And we are just south of Buoy 2.
Okay. So if I'm coming by boat to see you, I'll know where to find you.
You're going to look for Buoy 2.
Okay. Exactly. So you live there with your husband, a fellow real estate agent, and landscape architect, John. Their daughter, Megan, is a beauty and home design expert. And her twin brother, John, is an attorney working in law enforcement. So welcome. It's good to have you here. It's good to chat with you again. It's been a long time.
It has. Too long.
So how many books have you written?
My fourth one just came out in this series. It's called the Chesapeake Bay Mystery Series, and it's called Villain in the Vineyard. It's always centered around the Chesapeake Bay, but because this heroine is a real estate agent, it gives me lots of parameters to be in different types of locations along the bay, and it's usually tied into her business, because one thing I've learned and one thing I do love about this heroine's job, you know, sometimes in books like this, the job is so, it's a little bit of a stretch. How does someone possibly get involved in murder and mysteries when they, run a craft shop? And when you're a real estate agent, you are so involved in people's personal lives. You know what's in their medicine cabinet. You know who sleeps with who. You know who has a candy addiction because you open the drawers in their bedroom and everything's full of chocolate.
Remind me to use Redfin next time.
Yes, exactly. So nothing's a secret to a real estate agent, which, of course, leads her into involvement.
And there's an inherent danger, too, right? Because you're taking clients to places, just the two of you, to empty houses. Does that come into play in your books?
It's so interesting you say it, because my second book, which is Killer in the Kitchen, Helen, and I actually, you know, used that opportunity. I wanted the public to be more aware of the danger of real estate agents and that kind of career. On average, there's about 25 agents that are killed every year on the job. It's crazy, but that's what happens. And a lot of it has to do with you working with most often complete strangers, and you are entering properties that can often be empty. And even if they're not, you're in a situation where you're with people that could shove you into a closet, push you down a basement stair, do whatever they want. And you're really, frankly, trusting people to a great degree. And it is a very hard business to try to control your exposure to danger. So it's just sort of inherent in the business. So the book, it does involve that quite a bit. And I think it opens some people's eyes as to that part of the business.
Have you ever gone into a house and had, like, squatters in there or somebody that was in the house that shouldn't be?
I've not had squatters. I have had, actually, my first book, Murder and the Master, immediately in the very first chapter, first paragraph, a builder is found dead in the master bedroom on his bed, on the bed of, you know, that of the staged house. And years back, I did walk into a bedroom and someone was in bed, naked. They weren't dead, but they were there, you know. And I've actually, there's other stories in my...
Was that the homeowner or somebody else?
It was the homeowner.
Okay,
no, it
that's
was
good.
The homeowner,
that's positive.
Yes. Now, whether he was with his wife, I couldn't tell you. So, anyway.
Have you ever had a time when you were going to homes when you were nervous or thought this might not end well?
Well, actually, I believe it was Killer in the Kitchen. Yes, in Killer in the Kitchen, there is a scene where Helen goes into, meets a potential client, wants to see an empty house that's in need of work and on sort of an abandoned road. And she shows up, she shows them the property, they go into the basement dirt floor to look at the electrical boxes and things like that. And not spoiler alert, he does try to attack her. That actually happened to me.
Yikes.
They didn't attack me, but I was in that basement. The access to the basement was almost ladder-like. It was that primitive. And I remember being down there with a flashlight, looking at an electrical box with this man standing over my shoulder and thinking, I shouldn't be here.
Yeah.
What am I doing? It obviously turned out fine, but you realize how you put yourself in difficult situations.
Well, that 44 Magnum you carry in your purse
comes
in handy, doesn't it?
That would really, yes. I don't carry, but it might be a good idea. Yes.
So you mentioned conferences and how helpful they are. What tell us, like, when you come to a conference like this, what do you have goals before you come here, or are you just coming here and winging it?
I do. Well, I mean, maybe they're, you know, back of your head goals. One is to frankly see some old friends like you.
That's not old.
Yes, but friends. And you know, you enjoy that. You meet people that you haven't seen in a long time. I just met a woman here. I met her literally as we were coming in and checking in. And she had met me at a conference years back and had bought my first book. And then she bought the next two books.
That's great.
Yes. And so, you know, you meet people like that. And then, of course, you meet new people that you haven't heard. I like hearing new other authors and more experienced than I am that help me think about what I do with my writing approaches, whether it's marketing or the writing skill itself. So, yeah, it's really, really helpful. And sometimes it's just plain fun. You know, it's nice to just sort of be with a group of compatriots that really know how to just talk writing and, you know, have a little bit of a release, but still part of this world.
There really isn't another place like that, right? You spend all this time in isolation writing. And I mean, is there another place like that where you can get together with writers other than maybe a writing group that you have?
Yeah, I was just going to say, I mean, some people do get together with writing groups, but usually that's kind of hard to do. Most of us are spread out. It's just like you and I'd love to get together with you in person frequently.
I'll come down to Bowie 4.
Right. Exactly. That's a long way. So you know, it's hard to do that. So yes, it is really, really hard. And obviously Zoom has gotten very popular. That has been a huge change for the business because we have the ability to talk back and forth and learn from each other around the world where years back you didn't have that. You know, along with that, of course, is the fact that the world has changed so much in publishing.
Yeah.
And what do they say? Something like, is it something like 60,000 books are published a day? Something like that. I forget the exact number.
Yeah, it's 2.5 million a year now.
It's astounding. It's astounding. Yeah. So when you hold up your book one morning and you say to your fans, my new book is out, you're one of many who have a new book out. And I think people who are entering the world of writing, they don't realize the competition.
When did you, well, before I ask that question, when you say competition, like to what respect or to how much of it is competition? Because, you know, a reader can only read so many books a year.
Correct.
But also, if they read your book and they like it, they're more likely to read other books like that to find
Correct.
It, right? So
right.
How much, like in the mystery thriller genre, how much of it is supporting each other, or how much does like a rising tide lift all boats, including Bowie 2?
Including all that. Well, you know, it's interesting you say that because I am a believer, no matter what your profession is, rising tides do raise all boats. And so that's the thing that I think, I just wrote a blog just last week. It came out on Saturday on Writers Who Kill blog. And I write that blog once a month, and it was all about hiring professional editors. And that's a bit of a thing I have. I think it's so important for writers or would-be writers or would people that want to get published. They have to expect to get edited, and they have to be able to handle the feedback. If they can't, if I have advice for new writers, it's you have to be able to take feedback, to just toughen up and get over it and listen to what you can learn, because that is what helps you get better.
So how do you discern which feedback to follow? And when you're hearing it, like, how do you figure out what's good from bad advice?
Sure. Well, you know, it's funny. I'll tell you about my last book. It's just an illustration, but I submitted it to a professional editor I like to use even before I sent it to my publisher, who also then edits it. But I want to send it to them as close as I can to what I think is a good story. And he came back with 4 or 5 pages of commentary and that kind of thing. And I actually, as much as you inhale when you get it, at the same time you read it and you know what you're hearing is and you're seeing, most of the time in your heart of hearts, you know that his he or she, their suggestions are usually spot on, because in your heart of heart, you knew that already. But you know, we all get to that stage where you've been living with a manuscript for 9, 10, 12 months, day and night. You reach that stage, I just got to get this out to my editor. And in the back of your head, you say, but I know this is really not quite right, but you send it anyway.
Are you waiting for the editor to flag it for you to confirm your suspicion? What if they don't? What if you had a piece that you don't think works?
Uh-huh.
You send it anyhow, and
uh-huh.
then your editor doesn't flag it.
What do you do then? I guess it depends on how important it is. Yeah. But, you know, some of his comments come back, and I'm like, darn it. I know he's right. I just chose to ignore it. And the funny thing about it is when you go to rework it, it's usually not much. It's a few tweaks. It's a paragraph that has to be pulled and another paragraph that has to go in. So it's not huge. But I think those are the things that, in the end, raise your book and the quality of book to the next level.
Have you ever had major structural edits, like where somebody wanted, like, remove this character or this character doesn't work, it needs to be changed?
I've had not remove. I've had a couple things where the character isn't strong enough for some reason, that kind of thing. But I will also tell you that myself, I look, and I wonder, you might have the same, for instance, but I looked at a book I have coming out. It's already going to press. And I'm saying to myself, you know, there were two characters in that book. They were minor characters. I could have built the two together and made it one character and did the job of those two.
Yeah.
And it would have made the story that much clearer, more concise, and just a better book, you know. And but you learn from that. That's
it makes
of our
it easier
process.
For your reader, right? They have fewer characters to follow, and more people, they can get a little deeper into each character.
Yes, yes. And actually, it's interesting. I just read a very well known author, very popular book, and as I read through it and I finished it up, I said there were too many characters, and it was too much work for you. Heaven forbid you couldn't pick it up for a week, you know, that kind of thing. It could have been cleaned up a little more. And it just goes to show you, no matter how famous you might be, we always need to improve.
Well, sometimes if you get too famous, nobody edits you, right?
Well, they're afraid to touch it.
Yeah, that actually happens.
Yeah, exactly.
So how many point-of-view characters do you generally do? How many is too many? And how big is your overall cast of characters?
Wow. I always have just one. It's the hero one. And there's lots of debate whether, you know, first person or third person, I versus her, he, is the better approach. I think it depends on the storyline. I'm not personally a real fan of the first person, the I, because I don't like to read a book where halfway through the book I'm sort of feel inundated with I, me, me, me.
Yeah, that's the danger.
That's the danger, and that's very hard to touch. If you're good at it, it's great, but it can be overwhelming. And I think third person enables me to have the reader feel a little bit, you're not in their face quite as much. So, you know, they both have their advantages and disadvantages, but that's what I do.
Have you done third person present tense?
I haven't, so I have to look at that.
I mean, it's been kind of hot over the last couple of years.
Yeah,
but it's very different.
Have you tried it yet?
I can't. I have trouble even reading it. just because I spent so many years in third person, past and close third person and first person.
You can't get that
it's really it. Hard to read or write in the present tense.
Yeah.
It's very immediate, though. Mm-hmm. It's interesting.
I wonder why it's popular right now. Not popular, but it's a bit of a conversation.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. Mm-hmm. It's another tool. I can see myself using it at some point.
Right.
Do you try that when something new comes out, or do you push yourself have setting as character, or to try limited cast in a certain thing, or do you try different challenges to grow as a writer, or do you get into something where you're really happy and then try to make it as good as you can?
Well, I think what you're doing, you try to make it as good as you can, but you do need to, you need to stretch. I probably have grown as far as subplots are concerned and using them. Subplots are they're so important because it really does round out your storyline. And as I said, Killer in the Kitchen, a part one subplot was real estate agents being, assaulted in properties as they were showing them. And that turned into a mini campaign for Helen. The readers enjoyed that. They thought that was interesting. Did it have to be in there? No, but I built that in as part of the storyline. And I think you can do that and really grow your world, I guess is a good way of saying it. Yeah. Right now I'm dealing with a question of, I want my protagonist to leave town, okay, and go on a trip. I am really struggling with how to handle that, and I'm not even sure if I'm brave enough to do it, simply because so many people that read my stories love the setting, love the group of characters, and it's kind of like taking, Happy Days, and suddenly you don't have
the Fonz.
The Fonz in the storyline. And everybody would say, well, where's the Fonz?
Can we come up with a more contemporary
example? I know. I was trying to think of something quick. It's hard to pull people out of an atmosphere that they like, right? And so I haven't quite figured out how to work that out. So that'll be a growth point for me.
So that's interesting, right? Because you write what you want to write, and then you have reader expectations that you're trying to match.
Yes.
But you also have market that you have to write to, right?
Absolutely.
What wins when you do that battle? Like, do you write the thing that's driving your creative energy, or are you writing something that you know will be better received, or is more likely to be better received?
Well, don't forget, we need to be in a business where we grow our market. Right? You're not trying to rebuff your market. So that's, it's a balance. It really, really is. But but what my readers love definitely is part of, it has to be. I have to see, it's like you have a secondary character, and you can see people really relate to that secondary character. Well, that's a message to me that I need to make that, just like in a television show, they become a little bigger in the storyline than they were originally. Right, we see that a lot of times. Someone comes into the secondary character on a television show, and then suddenly they're almost equal to their heroine or hero because they're so well liked and received by the public.
Does that happen to you? In just with your own opinion, as you're writing a secondary character, you fall in love with them, or you're so intrigued, you want to write them more. That what started it, like, is your initial idea was small and it grew.
Yeah, and it grew. Yeah, and actually I've sort of toyed with that with different characters. But in the end, I think I know that my lead character has to remain the lead. That, it still has to be about their world. Could those other people be involved in a subplot in that storyline? Absolutely.
What do you find is, I mean, when did your first book come out?
First one came out the end of 21. So I've had one out every year. The latest one came out in May.
And published by who?
Level Best Books, and then Blackstone is my audio. Oh,
okay.
Yeah.
Oh, wonderful. Ed, do you find that the audio audience is different, or do you know?
I don't find them different, and I think it's a great avenue. I think it's a great avenue. Obviously, very, very popular. And it's interesting too. That there's people that always do an order on Kindle, and other people that always want it in print, and ebooks are like 40% of the market now, right? So,
yeah, audiobooks are growing the fastest right now.
They really are. Yeah, they are. Well, I think part of it, frankly, is that you have a older generation who have a physical need for audio. They like that. On the flip side, you have a lot of young people that like it because they're out running. They're out, they're in the car. You know, everybody's very mobile nowadays, so audio really is important for them.
Do you know who your reader is? Have you seen, like, the demographics and, like, downloads or reader engagement? Do you know who you're writing to?
A little bit, yeah. I don't pay too much attention to it, yeah. I would say it's somewhere between typically some 40 to 65.
I think that's normal for writing in general.
Yeah.
Except for a couple of very specific genres.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I always ask all the writers one question, and that is, where do you think story comes from? Where does this thing that you fabricate, does it come from? And I've heard, you know, answers from people feel like they're channeling it to, you know, just it comes out of like a wish fulfillment or, you know, where does story come from for you?
I would say it's just from observation. You know, I started off my initial career, my educational background was journalism, and, I was always trained with the who, what, where, when, how, and I was used to observing people, and I enjoyed observing people. And I think for writers, if you enjoy observing people, you're in a lobby and you notice the way that woman's hair falls, and you notice how that man holds his drink, and you notice how that person reads a book and you know, positions himself. All those things you put together and they create interesting people. You know, I remember way back when I was actually in a conference, at a conference, and there was a woman, this was way back, I think it was in New York City, and she had some kind of a purse, you know, and she carried it around, and every time I saw her, she had this stuffed animal with its head sticking out in the purse. And I honestly was like, this is a little odd. That's what I thought. This is a little odd. But on the flip side, great character. You know,
are you sure it was a stuffed animal?
Yeah, I know. It was stuffed. It was. Yeah, exactly. But nowadays it probably would be wise, you know. So, but that was probably 15 years ago when pets weren't allowed in areas as often. But, you know, you just look at those things. You hear people on the telephone, the newspaper. I use a lot of true crime in my storylines. I may adapt it to fit what I need. But, in fact, my latest book, Villain and Vineyard, is clearly from an unsolved case that was then solved recently. And I read that storyline and I thought, how interesting that is. And I turned that into a character and a motivation. So it was, and that was fun. And I actually think, reading a newspaper, online, wherever you get your news, that can be really, really interesting. I don't know how you've heard of it, but there's a story out just about the last 3 months or so about I think he was an eye doctor, and he would put in the eye drops in his wife's health drink or something every morning, and apparently there's something in that eye drop that can slowly poison someone, and sure enough, that's what he was doing. He was poisoning her, and they caught it before she died, but anyway, but there was a storyline. That's great storyline, right?
Yeah, unless you're her.
Unless you're her. Exactly.
She might not be picking up your book.
No, exactly. But, you know, you just have to be observant. If you're not observant, I think you have a hard time as a writer.
I agree. That's a great answer.
Yeah.
So where should viewers go to find your work?
Everywhere. You know, Amazon, obviously, Barnes & Noble in their stores and online. Independent bookstores, a lot of them carry it. I do a lot of signings. And so if they go, I'm not very good at it on my website, updating where I am and that kind of thing. I should be better at it than I am. And but that's probably the easiest, of course, is the online bookstores.
And what's your website?
My website is JudyLMurrayMysteries.com. Okay. And they can see me on the water with a laptop at Buoy 2. So,
Where should we get your books? Buoy 2.
Exactly. I'll swim out and hand you one.
Well, thank you so much, Judy. Great to see you.
It's been a
good luck and congratulations.